Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Om Ajnanata Miranda Syantinanjana Shalakaya Chaksehun Nanitam Minatasmai Sri Guru Venamaha Mukham Karoti Vachanam Pangum Lam Jayati Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Guru Dinitarinam Vancha Kapatirubhischa Kripa Sindhu Vaheva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pavanitananda Shyadvaitikadari Shvasi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just as the glories of the Lord are unlimited, so too are the glories of his devotees. The jiva who has covered by an assortment of anartas cannot understand the glories of Vishnu and the Vaishnavas. Even when such persons attempt to glorify them, their efforts are meager. Nevertheless, if one recognizes one's own inability and humbly glorifies the acharyas in a prayerful mood, the Vaishnavas always forgive any flaws in such presentation. Even though the neophyte devotee is inadequate in so many ways and is unable to glorify the Vaishnavas in a satisfactory way, if he does not do this, his inadequacies remain. Thus, the only hope for the conditioned jiva is that the Vaishnavas are merciful and accept one's efforts, not finding any fault in the endeavor. Anyone who engages honestly in the service of the Vaishnavas by glorifying them will find that by their mercy, all obstacles are eliminated. On such occasions, we should pray to them for the blessings and mercy. Such days are noted on Vaishnava calendars, and these should be observed by remembering them, glorifying their qualities, and praying for their mercy. This is an instruction by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. A devotee, this is from the Bhakti Mala, a devotee who collects descriptions of the devotee's glories, qualities, and activities, and who explains these, or who hears these and approves of these talks, will become dear to the Lord like a son or a daughter. The Lord will take such a devotee upon his own lap. So, some very meditative thoughts as we approach the subject matter of today's discussion. Today is also Gundisha Marjana. It's the cleansing of the Gundisha temple for the arrival of Lord Jagannath. As explained in great detail in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this pastime is not only literal, but it's also deeply significant in regards to cleansing our own hearts. So from these verses I've mentioned above from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we can see that this is a wonderful way to cleanse our hearts, thus glorifying the previous acharyas, and in this way observe the Gundisha Marjana by cleaning our own hearts. And even though today is also the disappearance day of Gadadhar Pandit, I'm primarily focusing on Bhaktivinoda Thakur today. So the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is well known to all of us. He's practically, in the overall view of universal time, an immediate family member. He was very liberal with others, and yet very strict with himself and with those who identified themselves as followers of Mahaprabhu. He was also very, very regulated, as we'll see from his own daily schedule, which is found in his own autobiography, which was written, I believe, 1886, something like that. It helps us understand the incredible potency of Bhaktivinoda if we examine his daily schedule. This is, of course, not the schedule that necessarily he followed every single day of his life, but this gives us an idea of during the period of time he was living in Jagannath Puri, and perhaps expanded beyond that, we see that this describes the great focus that he executed his day in. 7:30 p.m. to 8 p.m., he would take a bit of rest. At 10 p.m., he would rise from bed. This means 2 hours. At 10 p.m., he would rise from bed, light his lamp, and begin to write books throughout the night until 4 a.m. At 4 a.m., he would rest for a short bit. At 4:30, he would rise, wash his hands and face, and sit down to chant his japa. He never showed his mala in public and chanted numerous rounds each day. At 7 o'clock, he would answer various correspondences. At 7:30, he would read various philosophical books for an hour. At 8:30, he would receive any visitors, and if none had come, he would continue reading until 9:30. At 9:30, he would take rest for 15 minutes. Everything's very... At 9:45, he would have his morning bath and then take breakfast, which consisted of a half a quart of milk, some fruit, and a couple of chapatis. At 10 a.m., he would go to the court in his carriage. Till 1 p.m., he would hear between 30 and 50 cases. What the other magistrates in his company would do in 45 minutes, he would complete in 5 or 10. At 1 p.m., he would go home, take a bath, take a brief nap, and return to the office by 2 p.m. At 5 p.m., he would finish his day at the office. He would then return home and translate some Sanskrit books into Bengali. He would then take his evening meal, and that meal consisted of a bit of rice, some chapatis, and another half quart of milk. This brought him to his evening time for resting, 7:30 to 8. He kept a pocket watch, and everything he did was done very timely. So we see from this outline here, given by Bhaktivinoda himself, that he was extremely regulated in what he did and extremely focused in keeping himself directed in the goals that he had for the day. This solid regulation and discipline facilitated his being a prolific writer. And of course, we benefit from a great number of these writings, the songs of our Vaishnavacharyas and, you know, all of the different books that he's placed out there. He also wrote numerous articles, and I'd like to view two of those this morning. One of those is an article he authored called Pancha Samskara. And this was written in 1885 while he was deep into his mood of preaching. And here are some of the selections from it, which are quite important. Persons who read this instruction with faith will want to understand the meaning of the expression Pancha Samskara. In order to help them, I will first explain the conventional understanding of the term and then give its deeper significance. The Smriti Shastras explain Pancha Samskara in the following manner. Tapa tumbram tata nama mantra yajas panchama. Ami hi Pancha Samskara paramai kanti hetava. Tapa, pundra, nama, mantra, and yoga. These five items comprise Pancha Samskara. These five are the cause of intense devotion to Lord Hari. He continues, when a faithful person learns about Pancha Samskara, he approaches a religious teacher and humbly requests of them for initiation or diksha. After considering the student's sincerity, the teacher mercifully gives tapa and pundra to the student in order to sanctify their body. Some religious groups give tapa by marking the student's body in various places with the symbols of Lord Vishnu's conch, disc, club, and lotus by using hot iron brands. Other religious groups imprint the names and markings of Lord Hari with clay using a wooden stamp. All glories to Tilak. Pundra, or Tilak marks, are vertical lines drawn on the body. The Shastras interpret these vertical lines either as symbols representing the temple of Hari or representing his footprints. Accordingly, each religious group has its own prescription for pundra, which is universally accepted within that group. Nama, or the name, is the third samskara. Mercifully, the teacher utters the name of Hari into the ear of the faithful student. This name is to be recited daily by the student. Receiving Nama means that one understands oneself to be a servant of Hari. During initiation, the teacher also gives a personal name to the student, which indicates their connection to and devotion for Lord Hari. The fourth samskara is mantra. Out of his mercy, the teacher gives an 18-syllable mantra to the beloved student. This is also chanted daily. The fifth and final samskara is yaja, or deity worship. Using the mantra they have received from the teacher, the student begins the process of worshiping Shalagram Shila, or the deity of Lord Vishnu. By receiving this pancha samskara, the five sacraments, a faithful person enters into bhajana kriya, or the personal worship of the Lord, which eventually leads to pure love for Sri Hari. When we analyze the stages that lead to love of God, we understand that faith, or Shraddha, is the first stage. Without Shraddha, there is no way to obtain love of God. From faith, one seeks saintly association. This is called sadhusanga. This leads to the shelter at the feet of a spiritual master. Thereafter, pancha samskara, or initiation, follows. Pancha samskara gives rise to bhajana kriya, or the personal worship of the Lord. Bhajana kriya leads to anartha nivritti, which is the stage where one clears up the unwanted things in the heart. After anartha nivritti, one's faith can develop and one enters the stage called nishta, or mature faith. From nishta, taste or ruchi develops. This ruchi then leads to the stage called ashakti, or deep attachment. From ashakti, spiritual emotions called bhava come forth. This eventually ripens into the stage called love of God, prema. Therefore, everyone should seek shelter at the feet of a spiritual master and receive pancha samskara, which is the soul of bhajan. Without pancha samskara, bhajan is not spontaneous, but instead it is performed with great difficulty. Some people think that prema, our love of God, can be obtained without pancha samskara, but that is incorrect. The conditioned soul in this world has become hostile to the divine, and consequently, the original spiritual nature of the soul has become distorted. As a result, a person must sanctify themselves before that true spiritual nature can develop. And what is the means to this state? The best way is through samskara, or sanctification. Without samskara, how can one's distorted nature be given up? This is a particular style of writing that Bhaktivinoda was very fond of, posing a question on what he had just spoken, and then answering that question. In other words, addressing the challenge that might be there. During his time in Jagannath Puri, when he would be doing some of his readings or when he would receive guests, if there was no one, he would often pace back and forth on the veranda of his room and argue with himself. Now, generally, if we see this, I I work with an individual that is prone to carrying on full-length conversations with himself. This is generally seen as, oh, okay. But in the case of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this was his method for honing his preaching, objections to that preaching, and resolution of those objections. So he would do like this. So in this writing, we see he's making a point. Then he questions, okay, you may have this question. Then he answers that. So this was something that he was very fond of. If we see, back to this, if we see someone whose nature is not distorted, then we think that in a previous birth, through the mercy of a spiritual master, they must have received samskara. And on the strength of that samskara, they have obtained their true spiritual nature, which is prema, or love of God, and is allowed to rise. Otherwise, we think that that person has been imperceptibly sanctified by the inconceivable mercy of the Lord himself. No matter how we look at it, samskara is always there. On the other hand, samskara is not necessary for liberated persons because their nature is not distorted. Distortion of the soul's original spiritual nature is the cause of their bondage in this world. For this reason, without samskara, the life of the conditioned soul is impure. Even if a person has obtained prema on account of previous samskaras, still, in their present life, they again receive samskara in order to set a proper example for the good of all. Therefore, my friends, I've mentioned this before, when you're reading an author and an author has made all their points and they use the word therefore, it means they're bringing it to an end. They're giving the definitive conclusion. Therefore, my friends, with logic and pure reasoning, receive tapa, pundra, num, and mantra from a qualified teacher. Not only will you become happy, but by establishing this divine link with the Supreme Lord, you will benefit all the people around you. This is an amazing presentation by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which completely removes or defeats any idea that the process of bhakti is simply sentiment. This, of course, was the argument placed by Prakasananda Saraswati to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Oh, you're a sannyasi. You should be studying Vedanta, and you're dancing and chanting like some madman, you know? And so this, sometimes even in our modern times, would be used that you people just sing and dance and don't have any understanding of anything. We see, just from this one small article that Thakur Bhaktivinoda has written, a very, very detailed, exhaustive, and fully comprehensive explanation of how to come to the stage of love of God, of what's expected, of what's necessary, and how to execute it. Now, I've only just taken a few pieces from this article. The article itself is longer than this and is actually very, very lengthy. He then goes through, as he mentions in the beginning, and breaks each item down and then individually analyzes it and explains it and dives deeper into it. As we say nowadays, he unpacks it further. But the fact of the matter is that it is very strongly noted throughout this entire article the necessity of accepting these five principles, primarily the necessity of accepting a spiritual master. One additional point that he makes there, wrapping it up at the end, is that even those persons who are already on this level, now those of us that are accepting the shelter of a spiritual master, particularly great Vaishnava acharyas throughout our history, we see these are very advanced personalities. Many of them, due to the blessings of Kavi Karnapur and his father, Shivananda Sen, we can see from Mahaprabhu's time were actual intimate associates of Radha and Krishna during Krishna Lila. So we understand these personalities are not like us, that they're forced to end up in this material world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out here that even these persons take up the process of samskara for the purpose of setting an example for the good of all. We see this with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, and then all down through his line. Initiation from a spiritual master is performed. The presence of tilak is seen. The chanting of the holy name is accepted. So these are activities that those that are pure at heart, those that are completely pure souls coming to this world for the benefit of others, do not require to perform. But, as Bhaktivinoda says, for the good of others, they set that example. So this is a very, very wonderful article. The second article that I want to speak about is completely at the other end of the spectrum of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life. This is the final article that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote. It was written in 1907, and it's entitled Sri Sri Svaniyama Vadasakam, or The 12 Verses of My Own Self-Imposed Regulative Principles. We've got four regulative principles. Bhaktivinoda's looking at 12 here, which we'll see as we look at these is even deeper than that. It's important to remember as we read through these 12 verses of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that he uses two very significant explanations. One, my own, meaning he has accepted these for himself. And two, self-imposed. In other words, what he's speaking here may or may not be suitable for everyone, but he feels it is required for himself. This is, of course, one of the understandings of an acharya, is that they give us this example and they show us how to embrace these things. Now, of course, the instructions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur are suitable for all of us according to time, place, and circumstance. So he very significantly points this out in the title of the writing and, as we'll see, through the verses themselves. I've been, in my own time, as I'm reading through these, which I've done quite often, I've made it a habit to sing through, to recite through the mantras. I don't know the proper meter or anything. They're very, very long, and I became very attached to my particular way of doing it, but I'm not going to offend anyone by going that route. We're simply going to read the translations to these so that we can try and finish them before the allotted time. First verse. No matter whenever and wherever I happen to take birth, let my loving affection and attachment remain unshaken throughout each and every lifetime for the following things: for my divine spiritual master, for Sri Gauranga, for the detailed topics of pure devotional service and the methods of its execution as personally instructed by him. This we can reference back to the first reading on writing on Panchasamskara, how detailed all that is, because devotional service through the process of Krishna consciousness, through the process of the teachings of the acharyas, is very, very detailed. For the holy places of pilgrimage, such as Sri Navadvip, Sri Kshetra, Sri Vrindavan, etc., which are all blooming with divine sanctity due to the performance of the Lord's wonderful pastimes therein, for the Diksha Mantra bestowed upon me by the divine grace of my spiritual master, for the holy name of Sri Hari, for the most beloved eternal associates of the Lord, for the sacred days of celebration throughout the year, such as Sri Akadasi, Sri Janmastami, Sri Radhastami, and the appearance and disappearance days of the great acharyas, etc. For the Lord's dearmost devotees who strictly follow in the sacred footsteps of Sri Rupa Goswami, and for the holy scriptures narrated by Srila Sukadeva Goswami, such as the Srimad Bhagavatam and others. Second verse. The Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, is the personified abode of all divinely ecstatic mellows. And Sri Radhika is the topmost abode of all his divine potent energies. Indeed, she is the personified form of the highest mellow of love and separation. Within the forest of Vrinda, which is gloriously rich in the all-pervading treasure of the sweetest Madhurya Ras, this Lord Sri Krishna is continuously enjoying as he makes Sri Radhika happy by his loving service rendered to her 24 hours a day. This very same Lord Krishna is exactly identical to the son of Mother Sachi, who eternally lives simultaneously yet separately in Gaudadesh as the instructor of the process of rendering his own devotional service. May this Sachinandana become my supreme master and guide, and may he always appear to me to lead me on the proper devotional path, birth after birth after birth. We usually in our own context, you say birth after birth. Bhaktivinoda Thirumal, birth after birth after birth. Number three, let no form of so-called renunciation or asceticism become fit for my acceptance if it does not give rise to the continual expansion of my eternal serving mood of loving devotion. And let no form of so-called knowledge or intellectual cultivation appeal to me at all if it does not admit the reality of eternal individuality shared by the Lord and his devotees during their everlasting daily pastimes. I have no desire at all for practicing any branch of the Eightfold Yoga process, from none of them contain any scope of enjoying the daily pleasures of serving Lord Hari, such as his confidential worship does. Rather, may I render profuse, uninterrupted, confidential service 24 hours a day to Sri Sri Radha and Krishna for all time to come, such service being the means as well as the end. It's very interesting here that he explains that the expansion of loving devotional service, this is the only reason to accept austerities and renunciation. We know from our shastras that if one performs austerity and renunciation without some humility, without some service, the heart just becomes hard. So here he's expanding on that and saying that unless this loving devotion is brought about, that is renunciation and status, not interested. Number four. May I continuously reside in a small, lonely cottage at the base of a desire tree in the most holy abode of Sri Navadvip Dham, which is sanctified by the lotus feet of Sri Sachinandana. Such a bhajan kutir is perfectly suitable for constant remembrance of and service to the divine daily sports that are always present in Sri Brajadham. Indeed, in contrast to this, I will never live in any other place, even if it is hankered for with the greatest enthusiasm by the wisest of sages and demigods of all sorts. As far as all other places in this world are concerned, whether opulent palaces or temples, whether possessing vast riches of enormous wealth or princely kingdoms and property, all such places cannot attract me as much as my modest bhajan kutir in Sri Navadvip does. This is such a very revealing statement. A personality like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, due to his fame, due to his position, due to his riches, he was a wealthy individual. He could have so many of these different types of comfortable living arrangements. But he says all of these different things, they do not attract me as much as my modest bhajan kutir. I don't know how many of you had the good fortune to go to Mayapur and see his property, his bhajan kutir. You know, even the larger house itself is still quite modest, but the area that he particularly performed his bhajan in, very, very simple. 6, I think. I have no attachment to any of these caste divisions, such as Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra. And I certainly do not identify with any order of life, such as Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyas. I have no fondness or respect at all for the so-called piety of religiosity, or even for the so-called impiety of sinful life in this world, not even the slightest regard. Instead, I truly desire whatever is practically required just to maintain this material body in order to facilitate my performance of pure devotional service. This is the actual righteousness that I will hope for as long as this material body continues to exist. Of course, as this particular verse starts out, those of us who know can very quickly recognize Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's phrase, Naham Vibhrodhanchana Rapatanapi Vaishna Sudro, where he makes the same statement. I'm not any of these external things, whether they be spiritually external or socially external. No, none of that is me. Instead, let me just maintain this body for the purpose of executing pure devotional service. He continues, my austere vow is constant devotion to the lotus feet of Sri Hari. That's an interesting phrase in and of itself. It's an austere vow. We've mentioned this before that, you know, we observe things like Ekadasi and fasting, you know, from grains, and many devotees fast the entire day, and different fasts that come with the appearance and disappearance day of different personalities. And we just take it as normal, the four regulative principles. I mean, if you speak to the secular world, they can't even imagine how we're living. You don't do this, you don't do that. How do you survive? It is an austere vow. But by the activity of performing it, it becomes less austere. So he continues. In order to execute that vow, that is the vow of constant devotion to the lotus feet of Sri Hari, I have accepted the following qualities by my own endeavor. I practice great humility in my dealings with everyone. We can all embrace this. I try to keep simplicity and purity prominent in all of my practical arrangements. I maintain extreme tolerance in all types of favorable or unfavorable circumstances. I offer all respect unto others, regardless of who they are. I feel genuine compassion for all living entities and act accordingly. There are many transcendental activities which are recommended by the great devotees who are fixed up in unalloyed devotional service to the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And these can be found and described in the books that are full of the imperishable character and pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Only such transcendentally nectarian activities being recommended by great devotees and practiced by the Lord himself can indeed be called my own. The quality of a good writer is to combine words to give a very beautiful picture. These two words Bhaktivinoda combines together here, transcendentally nectarian. So transcendental by in and of itself is good enough. Nectarian is even better. Combine the two together and just an amazing thing. So only such transcendental nectarian activities being recommended by great devotees and practiced by Lord Chaitanya himself are indeed able to be my own. He continues. I have no attraction for living in Vaikuntha, that part of the spiritual sky presided over by Sri Sri Lakshmi Narayana. Nor do I desire useless activities of gross sense gratification in this world. This is usually the two options. You either want to live in the heavenly planets or just be a vishayi, a sense enjoyer. Bhaktivinoda's dismissing both of these. I will never cherish the desire for attaining the divine bliss of impersonalistic liberation even for a second. Furthermore, there are many transcendental pastimes of Sri Hari that may be very purifying for all the conditioned souls. Yet, such pastimes will never, ever give me any real happiness at all. Now, that's a very bold statement. I'll repeat that. Furthermore, there are many transcendental pastimes of Sri Hari that may be very purifying for all conditioned souls. Yet, such pastimes will never, ever give me any real happiness at all. So, in Bhaktivinoda's mood, one would say, well, why is that? He then answers himself in the next line. This is because such pastimes are quite different from the blissful ecstasies of Braj consciousness. Being completely devoid of any relationship with Sri Radhika, who is the one and only fountainhead of pure joy for Sri Krishna. Now, hold on to your seats for this next one. I now disown my wife, my daughters, my sons, my mother, and all of my friends if they have no genuine attachment for Lord Hari, for his devotees, and for his devotional service. I had someone ask me this the other day, someone that's somewhat new to the process of devotional service and trying to figure out how to navigate the waters. They're married, have children, business, and so on like that. And oftentimes we hear this type of an instruction, or even in our own immaturity in our early days of ISKCON, we saw this put into effect and cause much harm. But Bhaktivinoda says, oh, yes, I disavow all these things. If they have no genuine attachment for the Lord Hari, for the Lord's devotees, and for the Lord's devotional service. So when is attachment acceptable? When it is to those persons that are serving the Lord, serving the Lord's devotees, and engaging in devotional service. He continues, it is definitely a great sin even to accept food grains prepared by such non-devotional, materialistic sense gratifiers. Back to my previous point of combining words, a writer. Okay, non-devotional, okay, yeah, we don't want to do anything with non-devotional. Materialistic, oh, we don't want anything to do with materialistic people. Sense gratifiers, we don't want anything to do with sense gratifiers. But non-devotional, materialistic sense gratifiers all in once, that's really somebody to avoid. If I were to remain in the company of such persons, then how will the eternal perfection of my Hari Bhajan ever come about? Those of us that have the necessity for some type of occupation where we have to mix with non-devotee personalities, we can see that much of the time that we have to spend with them, it's very hard to stay focused in our Krishna conscious state of mind. That's because these persons have no interest in those things. Continues. There are certain persons who appear to be very advanced in devotion. Indeed, to increase their service to the Lord, they have long since rejected the evil company of those who are completely blinded by faulty arguments arising from so-called intellectual logic, those who are madly addicted to the fleeting pleasures of the dull material body, and those who are adverse to and envious of Lord Krishna, and those who are fond of the inferior, distasteful conception of liberation as it is cherished by all the impersonalists. They have thus favorably avoided all kinds of bad association. Yet, it is seen that such persons worship Lord Govinda without Srimati Radharani being present. This just shows that they are actually puffed up with excessive pride and conceited arrogance directed against Sri Radha, who is herself the best worshiper of Govinda. Therefore, I will never go anywhere near such so-called devotees, even for a second. This is my strict vow. Passing my life in a simple, practical way, eating only prasadam, grains and milk products, the remnants of the Supreme Lord, wearing only prasadam cloth that has been offered to the deity, using only pots and utensils. When I read that, I thought of two things. Sometimes you get some deity clothes as prasadam, be able to wear it. And in the early days of ISKCON, if you got new pants or whatever, devotees would bring it and put it on front of the altar and offer it to the deities. You know, you go to Walmart or Target or whatever and buy your clothes and come back and, okay, offer them to the deities before we, Using only pots and utensils sanctified by the Lord's exclusive service, I will thus remain completely aloof from material sense gratification. Living by the side of Sri Radha Kund, her very own abode, worshiping the divine couple with a blissful mind, the time will come for my body to die. At the soles of the devotees' lotus feet, who were themselves serving the lotus feet of the divine couple, I will thus give up my body. He is in no illusion. Bhaktivinoda in 1907, he's at the very end of his life. He only lives for 5 or 6 more years. And he understands that he's going to die. But he understands that let it be in the company of devotees. This is one of the greatest services that we can give, is to assist devotees as they're departing from this realm. There is a class of pure devotee who is completely expert and experienced in following all the instructions of Sri Satchinandana. Such a devotee incessantly worships Srimati Radharani exclusively, who is indeed the most worshipable personality and who is deeply absorbed every day in relishing the divine mellows of Sri Krishna's association. The pure devotee of this caliber definitely performs their confidential worship wholeheartedly and with exclusive surrender. Thus, he always lives in Sri Braj Mandala. I shall take the nectarian water that has washed the lotus feet of such a devotee and carry it on my head. Drinking it with great joy and with a devout heart, I will then happily offer my full prostration upon the ground in the nicest, most perfect way that I possibly can. This will indeed be my routine each and every day. I'm reminded of Kala Krishna, the associate of Mahaprabhu, who was expert at taking the remnants of prasadam from the devotees. He would even hide behind corners or behind trees and wait for the devotees. Said, no, because, you know, nobody wants to give their plate and whatever little tidbit of unfinished, undercooked pakora or, you know, some piece of a puri they haven't quite. No one wants to see someone else eat that off their plate. So the devotees were very opposed to Kala Krishna doing this. So they would eat in seclusion, making sure he wasn't around, and then they would look and go and throw it into the pit. And Kala Krishna would go to that place and secure that. So this is the mood, if not the exact activity, this is the mood. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about washing the lotus feet of a devotee. And then he carries that water with him and drinks it not only with great joy, but with a devout heart. Devout heart indicates that there's some faith that the foot wash that he's taking up will bring great benefit. There was a devotee, I'll tell it real quick. There was a devotee in 55th Street who used to do this. He would pour a little bit of water in a doorway and you'd walk through there and stepped in water, and then he'd reach out and take that water, and quite a character. And Bhaktivinoda proclaims, this will be my service day after day. 12th verse. As a spirit soul, my natural tendency is to be eternally situated in the loving service of Lord Hari. However, due to the strong power and influence of the Lord's Mahamaya, I have deeply plunged myself into the fathomless ocean of material sorrow and grief. I shall transcend this world of Maya and go to the spiritual world only by faithfully following these self-imposed vows every day. And the only way I will get the strength to follow these vows is by attaining the mercy of all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. May their causeless mercy and soft-hearted compassion, which wards off all illusion, become my exclusive friend and guide for all of time everlasting. This is such an amazing verse in and of itself, even if it were out of context, because Bhaktivinoda, through all of these 12 verses, has stated what his vows are going to be, what his austerities are going to be, what the performance of his type of devotional service is going to be. But then he notes here that I will only get the strength to do this by the mercy of the devotees. Not because of my own abilities, not because of my own good qualities, not because of my own dedication. By the mercy of the devotees, this is how I'll be able to uphold these vows. And this is exactly true for ourselves. How are we able to maintain the four regulative principles? How are we able to maintain our activities as a devotee that are seen by others as very difficult? By the mercy of the devotees. Sadhu Sangha. This is why we associate together. And why is that? Because devotees are merciful and soft-hearted and filled with compassion. Very wonderful there. Now, that's the 12 verses, Dodasa. He includes the 13th verse, the Palashruti. Everyone, those of you that are aware, everyone knows that a Palashruti is always at the end of any Ashtakam or Devashtakam because it's the benediction. This stava, named Svaniyam Dodasakam, was written by someone to adjust and regulate his own personal mode of performing bhajan. In other words, he's proclaiming again, this is for me. This is to purify myself. But then he says, if any other devotee happens to chant this stava with a very special quality of resolute faith, fully offering his mind unto the supreme beautiful forms of the divine couple, Sri Sri Radha Govinda, the divine beautiful form of their own deity, the beauty of Sri Gaurasundara combined with the form of Sri Sri Radha Govinda, Rupa Goswami, the dear most beloved devotee of Sri Radha Govinda and Sri Gaurasundara, to that person, then that most fortunate reader definitely attains their own place of eternal residence in Sri Brajadham. Always following behind his own Manjari guru in his own spiritual body of a Manjari, they will finally render all kinds of variegated eternal services for the exclusive worship of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Thus ends Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Svaniyama Dvadasakam. If time allotted, we could do a deep examination of each of these 12 verses. In my men's group, we did such a thing. We spent a weekend retreat going over each of these verses and each of us speaking on it and adding to it our various realizations and, you know, things like that. So I do suggest to all of you that you take the opportunity and do like this. It's very, very wonderful. This is the beginning, or not the beginning, but the prominent stage of Bhaktivinoda's life, the Pancha Samskara, and then the Svadasakam, the Dvadasakam, the 12 verses at the end, how he's going to deeply embrace the fact that his life is coming to an end and how it will go forward. I had also hoped to read the Gadadhar Ashtakam, 8 prayers to Gadadhar Pandit written by Sarup Damodar, but time is a cruel master. So we're at 9 o'clock and we should finish here. If anyone has any quick questions or comments, we'll try to deal with those. Otherwise, pretty much everything Bhaktivinoda has written is quite self-explanatory. That's one of the wonderful things about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings. They're not esoteric. I mean, I'm sure he delves into that in some of his books, but this particular selection, this is very, very practical. Very significant and practical instructions on how we can embrace being more Krishna conscious in our daily life. All right? So we'll finish there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Gadadhar Pandit ki jai. Gundisha Marjana ki jai. Gaura Premanandi.